Welcome, everyone, to Redacted on this Wednesday. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
So glad to have you here. Yesterday, someone wrote and said, I love your studio. It's so cozy and inviting, and I'm glad. Welcome in for the holiday season. So it's great to have all of you here.
This was Clayton's vision, all of this. If I had it my way, we would just broadcast from the kitchen. Right. I have no aesthetics. It's just not my thing. I don't care for it.
We actually have a bedroom that literally still has like a light bulb hanging on a string, and she's like, what? It's fine.
It doesn't bother me.
We need a proper light in there. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Welcome.
Just don't look up.
We're married. welcome into the show. Good to see all of you on this Wednesday. Boy, we've got a lot of news to get to today. Of course, last night during our live show, we had some supplemental Twitter files that were being released. We've gotten a lot more information on these Twitter files today, so we'll break that down for you. We're also going to look at this story out of China, which the Western media has totally ignored this story. They're happy to talk about, oh, China's, you know, easing some restrictions on COVID, but they've totally ignored all of the tens of thousands of people that are still being put into quarantine camps, still being rounded up if they don't have a proper test or if they don't have access to certain things or being cordoned off, taken away. It's really draconian. I mean, this is like Great Reset stuff. And we're going to show you some of these latest videos and kind of unpack what's going on in China.
Plus, we're going to take a look at the FDA continuing to push for emergency use authorization for drugs, including the COVID vaccine. Now they're pushing for emergency use for children under 5. Where is the emergency with that population? We're going to ask that question. We are also going to break down the Twitter news that we just spoke to you about 30 seconds ago.
That's right. We're also going to look at the latest on Saudi Arabia, because you remember journalist Jamal Khashoggi was killed brutally by the Saudi government. And we won't tell you anything more about it. It's just an unbelievable update to this awful, awful story.
I think we are going to tell you one thing. It's just that the Biden administration actually worked on behalf of the crown prince to get him out of answering for this murder. This is crazy. So I wanted to at least give you that much so you stick around.
All right. Well, that is the story then. Okay.
No, it's more than that.
All right. There's a lot more. All right. Fine. So are you uncomfortable? Good. Then Redacted starts right now.
They're uncomfortable because we're bickering. Don't bicker in front of other people. It makes them uncomfortable. Uh-huh. They have play dates.
And we have tens of thousands of people watching, and we're bickering.
Okay. Sorry if that made you uncomfortable. We worked it out over the musical interlude.
Did we? I don't think we really did.
You should see.
He apologized.
You should see David and I work together. Like when David and I work together, we've been in like several studio jobs. And I can't remember who it was, but somebody was like, You guys fight a lot. It's like, no, we don't. We just discuss things.
This is our love language.
Yeah. We discuss things efficiently.
Exactly. So yes, we are married. David is not married to Philip. That's his brother. Is your camera not on? Is that the deal?
I guess not. Here I am.
Is her camera not on? Is that the thing? Anybody? Oh, okay.
Try it again.
All right. I planned that.
That's all teacher.
Yeah. And Philip, our esteemed technical director, you never see his face because he refuses to turn on a camera, but he is the man who pushes all the buttons and keeps this train running on time. It's his birthday today. So happy birthday to Philip. Give a big shout out to Philip.
Thank you.
Happy birthday.
You are a Pearl Harbor baby.
46, right?
It's a day that'll live in infamy.
Yes, I am 46.
46.
Wow.
All right.
A few weeks older than me. Wiser. And I'll be 46 in a few weeks,
That's
December 31st.
Right.
And then David's
the
also
age.
Birthday. He'll be 72, which is tomorrow. Really exciting tomorrow.
And today's my dad's birthday as well. So happy birthday to my dad. I don't know how old he is. Does anyone know how old their parents are?
No.
60,
we don't want to know. I think that's the key. We don't want
to
know.
To me, he's always 30 wearing a muscle t-shirt. Anyway,
we've got a daily newsletter. We'd love for you to subscribe to it. It's totally free. Last night, someone said, hey, can you stop reminding us to subscribe to the newsletter? I said, no, I'm sorry, I won't, because thousands of new people join us every day here on the show. And for those thousands of new people, because the guy said in the email, he said, they'll find it. somehow. I'm like, no, they won't.
That's not how you run business.
You're just walking down the street and you just run into the redacted newsletter as you're walking down the street. No, you won't. You won't unless we tell you about it. So you've got to go to redacted.inc and sign up for it. It's totally free. It comes to your inbox first thing in the morning. You just put in your email. It'll be delivered to your inbox. You can read it over your cup of coffee, but it's the best newsletter in the world. Now, of course, we're going to tell all of you about it and all the thousands
it's
of new people.
It's not Field of Dreams.
Right. If you build it, they'll come. They'll just randomly show up and find the newsletter.
That'd be a nice thought. All the work we put into it every morning, and then we just send it out and be like, I hope someone finds that.
Well, no one found it. No one signed up for it. No one was told about
it. What's this stuck on my shoe?
It's the redacted newsletter stuck on my shoe. All right. So that's the newsletter. We've got a lot of news to get to on the show today. So let's start in China. I'll ask the question, is China easing up or locking down? Very interesting question. That depends on who you ask, and it's not as cut and dry as the media would have you believe it. So if you just jump onto the BBC's website, it's like, oh, it's happy times are here again. You know, China opening up, easing COVID restrictions, everything's fine. Really? I don't know about that. We only go where the facts take us on this show, and the Western media and the Biden administration have been ignoring this story. Won't even like support the protesters. They're just totally ignoring this story, whitewashing what's been happening in China, and it needs the attention of our redacted audience. So what happens in China doesn't just happen in a vacuum either, right? Like, this is an important story because we've seen lockdowns in Australia, we've seen lockdowns in other parts of the world, and they have very similar tones to them. So what happens in China is perhaps a harbinger what could be coming for many, many people under these controlled governments. Make no mistake about it, Klaus Schwab, other world leaders and unelected leaders like Klaus Schwab and the World Economic Forum Group absolutely want the control that comes with these types of lockdowns. And China is just as much a part of the Great Reset as other Western countries. People like to think that, oh, this is separate from it. It is not. They want a seat at the table. They absolutely want a seat at the table. That's why there's these backroom deals, these discussions with the Biden administration and Xi Jinping and that government. Western leaders continue to praise China. See, this is the thing, right? This is why there's no coverage of this story. It's because they continue to praise China. They want to continue to have this relationship and do business there. They might not say it publicly at all, but they're saying it in private, how much they love China. So they won't say it in public anymore. Well, maybe they let it slip here and there. They've let it slip on a number of occasions. Here's Klaus Schwab showing and talking about how much he respects and admires what China has done. Watch.
So we have to define how the world should look like, which we want to come out of this transformation period. I respect China's achievements, which are tremendous over the last over 40 years. I think it's a role model for many countries, but I think also we should leave it to each country to make its own decision what system it wants to adopt. And I think we should be very careful in imposing systems. But the Chinese model is certainly a very attractive model for quite a number of countries.
He really is like a Bond villain. Like, I'm serious. Like, he reminds me of Inspector Gadget villain, like Claw. Like, he just needs a cat. He just needs a cat sitting there where he just like pets the cat when he talks.
Yeah.
Like a little.
That's a good one.
Or not even a cat, like a stuffed, like a raccoon or something that he just like pets.
I think a skinless cat would be perfect. One of those.
Skinless cat. Because I think that was Inspector Gadget, right? I think that was the evil guy from Inspector Gadget, Claw.
I don't know about him having a cat.
It was Claw.
Yes, it was.
Okay.
Yeah, it was Claw.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you. Thank you to my Inspector Gadget fans. But, you know. Yes, so they saw a burgeoning middle class. You jump from like a few million in the middle class to a mat like 40% of the country is now middle class. It went from like 9% to 40% in a few years. So yeah, they've done a massive amount of work. At what cost, though? This is the question that no one wants to answer. So Western leaders love the control, the push to get their green agenda across the finish line, get these solar panels up and running, keep people from traveling, lock them down. Just watch Justin Trudeau. He talks about how sexy it is. Watch.
There's a level of admiration I actually have for China. Because they're... You know, basic dictatorship is allowing them to actually turn their economy around on a dime and say, we need to go green as fast as we need to start, you know, investing in solar. I mean, there is a flexibility that I know Stephen Harper must dream about of having a dictatorship that he could do everything he wanted that I find quite interesting.
I love how he blames it on Stephen Harper, right, the former leader, but he wants it. He absolutely wants this type of control.
Yeah.
And we've certainly seen that during the COVID lockdowns and trucker rallies.
I don't think you have to extrapolate very much. What he just said is very clear.
Right.
That if I had more power, I could turn things around a lot faster. So give it here.
Oh, like emergency powers that I took during trucker convoy?
That was fun.
That was fun.
I
like those.
Just keep that?
I like these emergency powers where I get to do whatever I want on a short amount of, in a short notice. Last week, we explained how the majority of Chinese people do not want regime change. They were protesting the COVID restrictions and zero COVID policies. So there was a lot of fake information that was floating around. And we, as we explained last week, China was forcing people into quarantine camps, which we've been covering. And this morning, China says it's easing those restrictions. Are they? And they're now people won't have to go to these camps? I guess the jury's still out on this question. Really? We'll see on this. Now we're getting a closer look at what these camps actually did to people. Some really disturbing videos have been coming out of some of the more rural areas of China. And now speaking of to sources this morning in China, they're telling me that this is not happening in the big cities. Like these quarantines are not happening in Beijing, but rather in some of the economically challenged areas of China. So what you're seeing here, though, needs our attention. We need to focus on this. And one of the most amazing pieces of video I've ever seen just came out yesterday. And it shows, look at this guy. He's like one white suited guy in the middle there, leading hundreds of people towards those quarantine check-in camps. It's like, and you see the people carrying their suitcases. They've got their bags with them. Like, you're following me slowly, calmly. Here we go. Follow me. Like, it's like lemmings falling off a cliff. You're going to, these people have to adhere to this. They have to.
Well, could that person have picked a better place to park?
Yeah.
So imagine, and here's they are, you know, here they are rolling in with their suitcases, checking in for these like prefab quarantine camps that have been constructed.
Wow.
And they're still building them.
Are they still having to wear masks? Because presumably these people have COVID.
No, I mean, here's the thing. I spoke to sources today in China who said, here's the thing. We have not been living with COVID. Every day we have to get a PCR test. Every 24 hours we have to get a PCR test. For the last 3 years of our lives, we've had to get a PCR test. We've not had COVID. One source told me, I've never had COVID, and I don't know anyone in China that's had COVID.
Oh.
The only people that he knows that has had COVID have been outside of China. And so now if they have these easing of restrictions, it's weird because you've had a spike in cases. So where are these people?
But they don't have a spike in fatalities or hospitalizations.
Right. So they're just being quarantined and taken away to these camps.
But you do get out of the camps. It's not one of those situations where they disappear people. We have plenty of reports of these people getting out.
Right. So you're there for 3 weeks or longer in these. I mean, but this is what they want. They want this type of control. And by, you know, I mean, you don't think that this can happen in your country? I got news for you. It has. It's been happening in Canada. It's happened in Australia, and it's happened in other countries.
The lady in Chicago, and it wasn't the mayor. I can't remember who it was, but she said that the goal was compliance. Like, mm-hmm. like I think that that's been the goal from the beginning.
Yeah,
yeah.
Of course. Be compliant, follow the rules, or you're going to be in trouble. I'm going to show you some more video here in a second. It's troubling. But here, I just want to give you kind of an update on the QR code piece of this, because a lot of people talking about this, like, the, you know, social credit score, like, what do you have? How many vaccines have you gotten? What does your QR code look like? So a source sent me his QR code today, and I'm not going to show it to you on the screen, but I have a separate video. I'm going to show you what it looks like to go through security with a red badge. So this is if you... Yeah, watch this. So you can't pass. If you've got red, you can't pass. Like, you've got to go back home. You are not allowed to pass certain turns. If you're green, you can go. And what this applet does, which is built into, a lot of people use it inside of WeChat, it'll show your nucleic acid certification period. It'll also show how many vaccinations you've completed. Like, how many? Just keep getting them. And your current status with COVID. And if it's red, of course, you can't pass these turnstiles. You can't go. You can't drive. Mm-hmm. You can't leave buildings. And he said it's mandatory. Well, you have to take it every day for 3 years. They've had to take these PCR tests every day for three years.
If they put something like that in the United States, what they're doing is like, if you didn't get boosted on the schedule that they say that you need to get boosted on, they could turn you red.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
That could end up not being just for traveling. That could be for your bank. That could be for going to the grocery store. Like, you might have to start scanning these things. I mean, that's the fear of where this can go.
Well, that absolutely did happen in Europe. We got QR codes that you had to use for either a vaccination, or you also got a QR code for recovery, or you got a QR code for a recent test, which only was good for 48 hours. And you needed to scan it to get on a plane, to go to a concert, to go to a lot of, to go to a Christmas market. We went to one
outdoors.
We went to one, an outdoor Christmas lights, meander through the path. And we were stopped every so often, even though we couldn't walk with other families, asked for our QR code. So absolutely this has happened. This morning I saw an article, I think it was in The Guardian, about how a researcher in Britain is warning that they might start using toilets even to see who's got what. I'm going to analyze what you just put in here. Thanks for your sample. Public toilet.
It would use microchips. So it would be microchips in the toilet to analyze you going to the bathroom.
Analyze your recent sample and see, what does that person have? Oh, go get them. Right. Yeah,
because you said you can tell so much about someone if they have COVID, if they have kidney issues, if there's something else in their bloodstream. We can analyze so much by what you put in the toilet.
And then what? You go get them? That's
analyzing,
like...
Analyzing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like Gattaca, the movie.
It is. Yeah, it is.
Where you can't leave an eyelash behind, because then they'll be like, this is not an approved person to be on this ward.
So this morning, the Chinese National Health Commission announced a swath of other new freedoms, they say. So they say they're aimed to decrease testing. And I have confirmed this with sources in China who said in the past 3 days now, they have not had to take a PCR test, which is the first time in 3 years they haven't had to do this. So we'll see how long this lasts. Lockdowns would continue, but only apply to more targeted areas. And so where you have these like economic zones, like if one person gets COVID in your block, you're rounded up and taken to one of these particular installations. So this is the issue, or you're forced to stay in that zone. You can't move. And of course, if you still have to scan your thing every day to go in and out of anything from a restaurant to grocery store, anywhere you go, you have to scan in and out. All social movement is tracked. Schools can remain open with student attendance if there is no wider campus outbreak. So it appears that there is this relaxing. We'll see. So it's maybe they did listen to some of these protests, but I just want to show you some of the like what these camps are still being constructed and videos still being released from these camps. So there's a weird kind of mixture going on here of opening and also still kind of lockdown. But these camps are really draconian. I mean, just look at these are you can roll this, Philip. I mean, this is what these things look like inside. Look, the bars on the window so you can't get out. You can't get out of these barred windows. This is what you get to sleep on inside of these things.
I could not sleep on that.
Yeah, it's awful. They give you one little table. They give you like, I mean, and by the way, you have to pay for it. You have to pay to be put in here per month in this property.
Can I pay to be put in there? Because it looks very peaceful.
Oh, yeah.
No one bothers me. If I have my books and no one bothers me, I'm fine with that, actually.
See, this is the type of compliant person that they're looking for. Like,
can I please get COVID and
look,
go
now,
there?
But here, now, look at these. Now, these are the drones, okay? So what you're seeing here, a bunch of Chinese internment camps. And then outside of these things around the cities, you're seeing these drones where these drones will show up out, these fleets of drones hovering above cities, monitoring foot traffic, blaring all kinds of propaganda messages. But what you're seeing here is them spraying some kind of anti-COVID chemical in the middle of the night.
Oh.
Just hovering over the street and spraying all of this random like anti-COVID chemical, like some sort of a disinfectant spray.
Out of curiosity, do you know what the homeless situation is like over there? Like, is there a lot of homeless? Do they deal with that at all?
I don't know.
I have no idea.
Probably not. I mean, if anything, they're probably rounded up and put places. I really don't know. I can't speak to the homeless population in Beijing. But if they are, they're being covered in this kind of chemical. That's for sure.
That's what I was curious about.
They're being disinfected on a nightly basis by these drones. And here's, China has fully implemented the digital vaccine passport system tied to public venues and retail stores. And you cannot function in a major Chinese city without an up-to-date vaccine passport. Or a negative COVID test that's now taken every couple of weeks, they said. So they're going from like every day to every couple of weeks. here, and they also have, they're telling you stay at home unless you have a PCR test. So these are the drones flying outside of the windows. I'm going to play this sound. This is a drone telling you stay home. Imagine just like looking out your window and there's a drone telling you what to do with yourself. Or the flow of traffic. Here's another one. If you have a green COVID test, you are allowed to pass. You have to scan this QR code above your car. So it's floating there as a drone with a QR test. Look at this. Like, you can pass if you scan and you're green. But if you're red, you got to turn around. You got to turn around. Go back. This is insane. I mean, this is like... Wow. This is insanity. And people are putting up with this, or the Western media is not even covering these stories.
Yeah.
They're not covering these stories at all.
Well, they'll cover it when it's an opportunity to hit at Chinese government, but not necessarily, you know, when it's like, oh, people want an overthrow of this government and therefore they think the West is the savior. But when it's something that the West actually covets, then they won't cover it.
Right. Oh, you mean lockdowns?
Lockdowns are awesome. Wait, but they're doing it in a way we want to do.
Right.
They're too busy. They're too busy, like, watching the playbook and trying to figure out how we could implement that here.
Yeah.
Right. And like, man, I wish we had drones flying through the city.
Well, and it's good cop, bad cop, too, because what you heard from Dr. Fauci last week, he gets to play good cop compared to the bad cop situation. Right. It's like, it's, oh, well, what they did was a little too far.
Yeah. Look at me. I'm so reasonable.
Yeah. We're reasonable here. Our kids only are behind 2 years in school now because of the lockdowns we put in place, you know, but. We're better.
Well, and if you look at, like, just look at the censorship of social media. It's like everybody, like, years ago, we were all like, oh, China, they block Twitter and they block all this stuff. We'll never get to that point. And it's like slowly now we're at that point. So it's like things that we see over there that they're like, ooh, I wish we could do that. It starts to happen.
Right.
So to think that this stuff couldn't end up here.
Yeah.
Naive.
Well, that's what Max Blumenthal says. You know, he said, what's going on in China has little to do with anywhere else, you say? Australia built COVID internment camps and arrested citizens for promoting anti-lockdown protests. Canada seized protesters' bank accounts. U.S. students were locked in their dorms. Insanity reigned in the West. So we should never forget this. And I think it's important. And the West is not covering these COVID internment camps. Only on social media in a small fraction, like a small group. That's about it. And hopefully, you know, us calling this to light here on this show.
Yeah.
But this is really happening. So we're going to continue to follow this with, you know, our sources in China on how this unfolds and what these are. They're really scared that they're going to go back into lockdown. They're like, it's very trepidatious right now what they're telling me, which is like, we're excited that we're now allowed to, like, have some pullback on these restrictions. But we're not really sure how long these will last.
But yeah, you know how it feels because we did live under strict lockdowns where on certain days we couldn't even leave our neighborhood. You know, I went out for a run and was told by the police to go home, and I was running alone,
right,
in the street that was locked off. And when the restrictions start to lift, you're kind of like, is this going to stick? Can we really do this? I mean, I'm still haven't stopped the muscle memory of putting on a mask to go into a space because we didn't have a choice.
God, never again. Well, let us know your thoughts on this story. We've got more news to cover. We're going to talk about DeSantis going after the vaccine manufacturers. This is going to be an interesting discussion. And again, here's another story that the mainstream media is totally ignoring. Now, we're also going to look at the Twitter files, the very latest on that. And we're going to talk about Saudi Arabia. So let's talk about DeSantis, shall we? So I predicted earlier this week on the show that we could... That Governor DeSantis perhaps might start banning shots in the state. I thought that he might start banning shots in the state of Florida. At a press conference, he said this about the mRNA vaccines. Watch.
It was not grounded in data. It was not grounded in evidence. It was basically the current thing. You know, people would put in their Twitter profile a mask and a syringe, and that was like their identity. And it was ridiculous. They lied to us about the mRNA shots. They said if you take it, you will not get COVID. That is false. That is not true. And they continue to say, even now when the evidence is so overwhelming, that not only is that not true, people that have multiple boosters, you know, you're definitely at risk of getting it. There's no question about that.
So that was late last week. And I said on the show, you were sick, but I said, so I want to get credit for it, even though you weren't here. And David Phillip backed me up on this. I said, the next step, I think, in Florida is going to be, you know, because they already banned masks, mask mandates indoors and all of that. So is the next thing going to be, they're going to start going up against Pfizer, Moderna for these shots?
Yes.
You know, do that at a federal level versus state? That's the question, right?
You know, everything he's saying here is true. And remember how 60 Minutes did a whole piece on how he was a demon, basically, because he wanted to slowly roll out the vaccines because he was doing it in a way they thought was not accessible to older people for all kinds of reasons. And now the things that he is saying turn out to be true. And, you know, I sort of erred on the side of like, okay, let's be careful. Let's do what they say. You know,
and he did too at the beginning, at the very beginning. I went back through some early transcripts today of his initial speeches, and he was, he was pushing the vaccine. At the very beginning. And so was Trump, of course. And, you know, now what they're saying is, well, you lied to us. You lied to us about what was in these. You lied to us when you told us false statements at the federal and state level from these pharmaceutical companies.
And that's provable. And so we're going to talk about how he is making a plan to go after these vaccine makers. But when you think about how he could do so in a court of law, he was a military, wasn't he? He was like a few good men type lawyer.
Yeah, he was
lawyer.
A JAG. I think it was a...
That's what they're called.
Air Force lawyer, JAG.
And so you could actually prove what was told to public authorities versus what the pharmaceuticals knew and cross-check those dates in a court of law. And so he knows that these things are empirically provable.
And there was a point, of course...
This is the first time where the CDC, like, why would they assume that the CDC was lying all of a sudden? Like, when in history have they done that? You know,
right.
Like they're the ones giving the information. So it's like, oh, we better listen to the CDC. But then as the information kept changing, you realized, wait a minute.
And the FDA as well. Right. This morning we talked about in the newsletter how the FDA is now rolling back a lot of these emergency use authorizations that they used so willy-nilly in the last decade.
Yeah. I mean, it's really stunning. And to see, you know, going through these early transcripts of his speeches in early 2020 and 2021 as these vaccines were rolling out, it's interesting to see him change because he's saying, wait a second, I'm not going to, you know, there was the second dose of Pfizer's vaccine that people needed to get. And he, as governor, was like, I don't think that's necessary. And they're like, whoa. And the liberal media was like, whoa, wait a second. But Pfizer's telling us you need to get that second one. And DeSantis is saying, no, not to. And then CNN does a whole little series on DeSantis where they analyze DeSantis and they like reluctantly are pointing out because he's there like, look, Miami is booming. We didn't shut down. Miami, like people are on the streets, businesses are booming, go to Los Angeles and it's like, you know, it's totally dead. Totally different story in Los Angeles. Here in Miami, though, it's booming and CNN was like, well, he was right. You know, and they're like, I guess we have to admit this. So there was an evolution there, definitely. But now the evolution has gotten to a point where Ron DeSantis is saying that the Americans need to unify behind the science that has led to the rapid development of vaccines. Initially, that's what he was saying. And then he evolved and says, you know, basically we were lied to by these people. And it didn't take long because now DeSantis is back and planning to hold Pfizer and Moderna accountable over false statements about the vaccines. He says his Surgeon General is working on this. Watch.
Be able to show and how they marginalized people that were speaking the truth on COVID was really, really damaging. And it ended up killing people because people would tell the truth and they would get deplatformed on Twitter. We're also going to be doing some stuff because I have a Surgeon General in Florida, Dr. Joseph Latipo. Who's been really, really strong of just fighting back against the narrative and the phony things that people are trying to do and focus on the evidence. And so, you know, we are going to work to hold these manufacturers accountable for this mRNA because they said there was no side effects, and we know that there have been a lot. And so we did a study in Florida, and you saw an 86% increase in cardiac-related activity from people 18 to 39 from mRNA shots. And so we're going to be doing some stuff to bring accountability there because I think it's just something where...
So this is interesting.
86%, holy cow.
Yeah. So why is the media ignoring this story? Totally ignoring this story. Do a Google search for Ron DeSantis Pfizer. Do a Google search for DeSantis mRNA.
Trump Santis to them. You know what I mean? Like they put him in the same category as Trump.
You won't find a story on it, though. Even the Florida press ignoring the story. He's there at the governor's mansion.
Because they are sponsored by Pfizer.
Yeah.
Oh, I wouldn't doubt it. And Moderna. And so.
Yeah, if you go to like Orlando Sentinel's website and probably dig around for some advertising, go to Tampa Bay Tribune, Miami Herald.
They also, you know, they don't cover a lot of the document releases that we've seen from Pfizer. Mm-hmm. They don't cover adverse reactions. They just don't.
But here's your governor speaking about a major bombshell story. This is the first governor in the nation to say that they are going to actively go after these biopharmaceutical companies, and now for lying.
Because because Pfizer has immunity, and so does Moderna, and so does, I believe, Johnson & Johnson and AstraZeneca. They have immunity from being sued by us, people. Do they then, though, have an immunity at the state level? This is an interesting question.
And under what immunity? You know,
vaccines were rolled out federally.
Right.
And so can a state even do that? What's the jurisdiction? These are important questions that I'm sure legal minds have already tackled.
So he admitted that basically he says it here without saying it here, that lawsuits are coming. Get ready because lawsuits are coming.
My question is, we wouldn't let them mandate on you in Florida. You know, we said, you know, no, because like Orange County wanted to fire firefighters, Gainesville wanted to fire people, but even the corporations like Disney wanted to fire. So we said no across the board. So everybody had the ability to opt out of anything they were trying to impose on you. But there are other people around the country that got forced to take this. And then what? They're not allowed to sue or get any type of recourse when this is not something that they wanted to do. So this is something that we're going to lead on in Florida. So we're going to have probably some announcements over the next 3 or 4 weeks on that. But we're happy. Just think about...
So like reimbursement.
I'm listening.
I mean, let's unpack that. What do you think? I mean, reimbursements for being forced to get a jab...
You can't reimburse
wages?
Lives that were lost.
Right.
No, but you can reimburse for anyone who, well, let's say they felt coerced to do it by an employer or because we've already seen litigation like that around a private health insurance. So people who were fired for not complying and people who complied in order to keep the job are also eligible for settlements.
Well, then my question is, are they able to get those protections on a non-approved drug? Like, you know, it's still emergency use authorization. It's not like technically approved. So does it say anywhere like that they have the protections when it's an approved drug, or are they just protected no matter what?
Well, that had to do with why was it the FDA that had voted to put it in place for children?
Right.
Because the putting it in place for children's regular vaccine schedule meant that they were able to then have liability going forward. So perhaps, but again, this is a really interesting question of jurisdiction because COVID vaccines were rolled out by the federal government and paid for by the federal government and then sent to the states. So it brings up the question, what individual... choice did state governments have? Did they have any? Could Ron DeSantis have said, no, not for Florida, we're not doing this? And then someone would have had to cross state borders if they wanted to. Could he have said, oh, we're only doing it privately in Florida and we're not going to do it through the government? Like, we don't know. We don't know these questions.
Well, we do know that it's gone all the way to the Supreme Court, I think in the early 1900s around the smallpox vaccine. So there was federal precedent for federal jurisdiction over states' rights as it related to vaccines.
if you look at the marijuana stuff, like that's kind of a good, where a lot of states, because that's federally illegal still, and there's a lot of states that are doing it, and it's the federal government has just decided not to go into those states and do something about it. And I think this would be the same thing. States can decide to do things. It's just like they're going to lose funding on a lot of things if the government's like, hey, look, if you don't comply, you're losing this funding, you're losing this. So it's just like a decision. I think they could, but then the federal government could either go in and enforce it at the federal level, or they can remove funding and try to basically sanction the state.
So then my sort of envisioning of this litigation would be the state of Florida versus the FDA or the CDC or, you know, or Pfizer, Moderna, for giving us these data points they knew were wrong. And we've already seen that. We saw that in the case we spoke about last week about Albert Bourla on the BBC saying that something about the infectious level of COVID for children that was not proven and getting in trouble with the British government for that.
Right, right, right. So now the FDA, speaking of the FDA, the Pfizer is asking the FDA now to clear updated COVID shots for kids under 5 years old. So let's look at this. Here's the Los Angeles Times headline this morning. Pfizer is asking U.S. regulators to authorize its updated COVID-19 vaccine for children under age five, not as a booster, but as part of their initial series of shots. Children aged 6 months through 4 years already are supposed to get three extra small doses of the original Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine, each a tenth of the amount that adults receive, as their primary series. If the Food and Drug Administration agrees, a dose of Pfizer's Omicron-targeting vaccine would be substituted for their third shot. Pfizer and its partner BioNTech said Monday that change could help prevent severe illness and hospitalization from COVID in little children, at a time when children's hospitals are packed with youngsters hit by other respiratory illnesses.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
What kind of clown world are we living in?
I don't know. I guess you don't need an emergency to declare an emergency. This is like, how our kids think it's an emergency to find their shoes in the morning. Like everything's an emergency.
Do you remember the movie Dope Sick where that sinister looking pharmaceutical guy is in the meetings and he's like, we're going to make more profits. I'm going to do that. It's like, I can just see them in these meetings talking about going to the FDA. Let's take it to 6 months year old kids. We can make a ton of profit if we make them make these mandatory. It's like you just see Dope Sick playing out in real time.
Yes. Well,
and because we've already heard that they can't figure out a way to sort of monetize long COVID. Right. So the people who have had, long COVID as a result of, you know, getting it, but also anyway, they can't figure out a way to monetize that because they don't have like some sort of a solution for long COVID yet. So how do we then? Okay. We've got to also figure out other age brackets to really target. Now let's make this a mandatory part of your series with the federal government. Like unbelievable that we would have this as part of your child's inoculation schedule, as part of their initial series of shots. And, I guess, and I hope you can opt out of this stuff. I mean, as a parent, right? I mean, I don't know. If you go to public school, though, they may mandate it.
That's on a state-by-state basis.
So what states are going to say you have to do this? Others, you're going to have a mass migration. Like if you have certain states that are like, yeah, you absolutely have to do this in New York, et cetera, but you don't have to do it in Florida. You don't have to do it in Texas. You already see a mass migration of people leaving those states to get out of there.
Yes. And you see a lot of the litigation now has to do with the religious exemption as well, because a lot of people have tried to use that as a reason not to have to comply with mandates. That hasn't done so well in the courts up to now, but some states disallow religious exemption. Some states, require it on certain basis. It's wild.
And one more final point on this is that other governors could soon follow suit with Governor DeSantis and maybe in different ways. So Governor Youngkin of Virginia announcing that he's ending the COVID-19 fines and penalties in Virginia, and he wants reimbursement process in place for those who had to pay unjust fines. So you may start to see this now.
Fined
it would be awesome if a bunch of states got together and did kind of like a class action kind of thing. You know, it's like all these states go after him at once, because that would be a lot harder for them to fight if it was like, you know, five, six big states going after them.
Yeah. Actually, I disagree because I think that more individualized lawsuits hurts more than when they join up, because when they join up, they have just one chance and one chance for dismissal. And if it's dismissed, that's it.
That's a good point.
But if they go at them separately for different things, like right now we see the Missouri and the Louisiana attorneys going after the attorneys general going after the Biden administration for censoring information around the pandemic, that is one piece of it only. But if somebody else takes a whack at vaccine information or information disseminated through the Biden administration or through the Trump administration or what have you.
Fines.
The fines piece is interesting. Do they mean fines for breaking quarantines or what fines were in place? I didn't think people were getting fined for not having the vaccine.
No, but fines for businesses
$1,000 a day.
Yeah, if you were operating without putting in proper COVID protocols at your business and things like that, like plexiglass, which did nothing, you know, like that kind of crap.
That was the argument at the beginning, because a lot of those places were charged $1,000, and the Walmarts, the Targets, they could afford it. So that was like a way to initially start closing down the small businesses that couldn't afford to do that.
Yeah.
Do you remember that company? There was that gym in New Jersey that made a lot of headlines, and people were like, these meatheads, they just have this gym open. They won't close down. And they were refusing to close down. And New Jersey was like, sent like, the SWAT team to close
them
down.
That's right. They did.
Yeah. Like these types of people. And like now it's amazing to be on the other side of this and to see these companies that got screwed by this.
I mean, it's really just too bad if you don't have your own private gym in New Jersey.
Right. I worked at Amazon right when the lockdowns happened, and it literally looked like a prison when you walked in. Like it was, you had the big, like they already had like the lockdown entrance, but then you'd walk in and there'd be like these little, you'd have to get in like a line and they'd scan your temp. They'd take your temperature. There's plexiglass everywhere. I mean, it was like prison level. When they did this, like how insane they went with it. You couldn't talk to people. Like it was bizarre. It was bizarre.
That's crazy. Yeah. I mean, and think about, and that's just in America. Like we showed you the Chinese stuff earlier, like in our other segment, it's just awful, awful. Let us know your thoughts on this story and more. Please, really, really helps us if you smash that like button. I know it sounds trite to say, but actually since, we're not the mainstream media, we're not CNN, we're not Fox, et cetera. They boost the mainstream media, and they like don't do that for
suppress.
Us. They suppress. So one key way, if you're watching us on YouTube, is to smash that like button, and it actually forces it out into the algorithm, so more people get to see it when we are live, which is a really good thing. And if you're on Rumble, thank you so much. You don't have to do anything. Just smash that little plus sign there. And then, Rumble is a free censorship platform. So thank you to our Rumble fans and to everyone watching.
Not free censorship. Censorship free.
Censorship
free. They don't give you free censorship. They give you no censorship.
No, that's funny. The name that popped up behind you right when you said that is No Censorship.
Wow. Oh, thank you, No Censorship, for becoming a member of Redacted.
That's right. When you subscribe to the channel, your name will pop up right here on the screen. And if you become a rebel, too, by becoming a VIP, it'll pop up here. We've got more news to get to. We're going to talk about the Twitter files, the unbelievable nuggets that came out of the Twitter supplemental files last night, as well as what's going on in Saudi Arabia and the awful, awful move by the Biden administration to basically let that country off scot-free for the murder of a journalist. So we'll tell you about that. But first, I want to tell you about our friends at Aura. Did you guys know that identity theft is the fastest growing crime in America? In fact, I saw a study last week that said cybercrime in the next few years is going to grow by over 100 times. That's good news, because we use the internet all the time and we have our banking information. There's a new victim every 14 seconds. And that's why I'm excited to partner with today's sponsor, Aura. Last year, we had our entire Facebook account taken over by hackers out of like Vietnam or something. And I called David. I was like, oh my God, our accounts, we can't stream there. We can't do anything. Like, what's going on? Aura is identity theft protection, fraud monitoring, a VPN, password management, and antivirus software all combined into one easy to use app. You might have one of these services already, but if you don't have all the tools, it's like locking the front door, but leaving the back door wide open. Those who've had their identity stolen are often shocked when it happens. Imagine trying to log into your email account one day only to see the password has changed hours ago. And then you start getting notifications that someone's trying to activate, use your banking information, your credit cards, your crypto accounts, all of that. That's scary. And it happens to so many people. Thankfully, Aura monitors the dark web for your emails, your passwords, and your social security numbers and sends alerts fast. Here's a little, this is amazing. A few weeks ago, you and I had to do a notary for something. Okay. Mm-hmm. And the notary had to verify our identity. I didn't know that. They use like a verification identity service. Later, like a few minutes later, Aura sent me an alert saying someone was trying to verify your identity.
Oh.
Isn't that amazing?
Yes.
So I'm like, what? Oh, yeah. We just did a notary like a few minutes ago. So Aura knew about it, that someone was trying to get my identity. Isn't that crazy?
Well, yes. They ask you like, you know, did which one of these cars have you been associated? That's why asked you that.
Yeah.
I was like, what color was your this car? And you're like, what?
Yeah. What was your first car? I was like, why are you asking me this? Are you trying to?
No, they ask like, what color was your, you know, Bronco or whatever. Clayton never had a Bronco.
I had a white Bronco.
No, you didn't.
Used to drive OJ around back in the day. So Aura gives you near real-time alerts on suspicious credit inquiries, like if someone was opening a loan or credit card in your name, and you can protect your family from identity theft right now by going to aura.com/redacted. Aura.com/redacted. You can try it for free for 2 weeks. You can sign up. They're going to give you a 2-week free trial with our link so you can see for yourself how many times that Aura finds you and your family members' personal info on the dark web. And if you sign up, let me know in the comments section if any of your personal information was discovered thanks to Aura. So go to aura.com/redacted. You have to use that URL to get your free trial. Again, we'll have a link in the description below. That's aura.com/redacted. All right. Should we talk about Twitter files?
Let's do. All right. Journalist Barry Weiss, who is one of the journalists going through the Twitter files, said, "My jaw hit the floor when she found out who had been censoring the Twitter files." So back to this story. This is regarding information that new owner of Twitter, Elon Musk, promised, showing how Twitter had censored content in the past. We already covered the first dump extensively on Friday. These three had a party.
Four, five, you guys were,
I was away and they had a Twitter reveal party.
Yeah, so
that was fun.
So people were saying last night during our live show, oh, the next round of Twitter files is being dumped right now. And I had to say, no, they're not being dumped right now. It was just like a supplemental update,
yes,
but an important one.
So we took our sweet time to read it over today and we are ready to talk about it today with you. Now, Elon Musk had said the second round would come on Saturday, so we all waited and waited and nothing ever came. But now the journalist who went through the files and presented them to us, Matt Taibbi, explained why. Here's the thread. I apologize, it's hard to show tweets on a screen. I did my best, so let's go through it. He's calling this Twitter Files Supplemental. He says, on Friday, the first installment of Twitter Files was published here. We expected to publish more over the weekend, and many wondered why there was a delay. Yes, we did. We can now tell you part of the reason why. On Tuesday, Twitter Deputy General Counsel and former FBI General Counsel Jim Baker was fired. Among the reasons, vetting the first batch of Twitter files without knowledge of new management. So what does that mean? It means that the first round of Twitter files that we all saw was censored. So this is, I mean, that's very meta, right? Because
right.
This is a story about how Twitter is censored. And that information was censored. So, okay, explain that.
You
Let's
know what?
Go on.
When we
to-
did the initial coverage, that makes sense because remember they said, hey, we got to go through and do some more fact checking, and it ended up being way later than what we were told.
Yes. And that sounds strange to me because I was feeling like if they don't have it all, don't say. You know, like you're not ready to go to press, don't go to press. No one was pressing them for this deadline. They gave it to us and then we all kind of waited there for an hour. So I don't know, that was strange to me. There's a couple other things that are strange, but I want to wait on that. And he said it was being censored. Next tweet. The process for producing the Twitter files involved delivering to two journalists, Barry Weiss and Matt Taibbi, via a lawyer close to new management. However, after the initial batch, things became complicated. Over the weekend, while we were both dealt with obstacles to new searches, it was Barry Weiss who discovered that the person in charge of releasing the files was someone named Jim. When she called to ask Jim's last name, the answer came back, Jim Baker. Weiss said, my jaw hit the floor. She says the first batch of files both reporters received was called Spectra Baker emails. So they were like, oh, maybe that should have tipped us off for something. They already knew who Jim Baker was. They didn't have to then go look him up. That's why she was like, no, it can't be that guy. How can that be? He continues, Baker is a controversial figure. He had been something of a zealot of FBI controversies to 2016. From the Steele dossier to the Alpha server mess, he resigned in 2018 after an investigation to leaks to the press. The investigation was of him, by the way. He was investigated during the Trump years for leaking some things to the press. The news that Baker was reviewing the Twitter files surprised everyone involved, to say the least. New Twitter chief Elon Musk acted quickly to exit Baker on Tuesday. Reporters resumed searches through Twitter file material, a lot of it today. The next installment of the Twitter files will appear under Barry Weiss's tag. Stay tuned. So this is interesting. Now, he obviously was not charged with anything in these investigations of a leak, so we don't really know much about that. But it's interesting because this Baker guy has been there all along at Twitter, and no one thought to check what he was up to while he was busy handing over documents. Here's a picture of Jim Baker. Did anyone ask why he was holding back information on this project?
I've got these documents. I want to scrub these before you guys release them. I'm going to remove all words related to FBI. Got to cover our tracks.
So here is someone actually asking Elon Musk, like, did you ask him why he did that? And here's his response. He says, in light of concerns about Baker's possible role in suppression of information important to the public dialogue, he was exited from Twitter today. And this user says, was he asked to explain himself first? And Musk says, yes. His explanation was unconvincing. Hmm. Which, okay. What is unconvincing to me is, why did he make it through the first round of layoffs in the first place when it's so clear that he worked with Vijay Agad on the censorship of material?
Right. Specifically, the Biden laptop.
Yes, he was instrumental in that story.
Right.
Does he have an invisibility cloak? Like, when they went through layoffs, how did they say, yes, that guy, he's ideologically aligned?
That guy in the lunchroom down there, that guy who worked at the FBI, he's an intelligence guy. He's now working at Twitter. Like, just leave that guy. I'm sure.
Why was he allowed to be? This is just a management question. Like, why was he allowed to be the wall that they had to go around?
Does that mean that he was worked there? Like, was he an attorney for Twitter? You know, like they had a group of attorneys, and maybe they didn't know that he was who he was.
No, his job description was, and it wasn't. He's not a contracted law firm. He was Twitter deputy general counsel.
Wow.
So yeah. This is not like it's not like they contracted him through a separate law firm.
Yeah.
I need to check my bank account and see if I work at Twitter too. Maybe I do. Maybe I'm getting paid and I don't know.
You don't even know about it.
I mean, there's so many questions, you know, and I was reading through a lot of the questions, to this response by Elon Musk, like, why did Twitter want him in the first place? Or did the FBI want him in Twitter?
Right.
These are interesting questions that we deserve an answer to. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I mean, Twitter was eager to get the guy, right? So this is the thing. After he leaves the FBI, like, Twitter was happy to have him, happy to bring him on as deputy counsel. Like, they wanted this cushy relationship with someone who had access to the intelligence community. And that's incredibly troubling. He was actively involved in these back channels. This comes back to the Twitter partnership program, the back channel portals that still exist. So he was actively involved in this back channel. So the back channel that I asked Elon Musk about last week on the show was specifically used by Jim Baker to have a communications with the Biden administration inside of Twitter. That's exactly what was happening in that pipeline.
So the New York Post calls Baker the Kevin Bacon of government scandal, especially in the last decade. Here are the pieces that revolve around him, according to the Post. Baker has been featured repeatedly in the Russian investigations launched by the Justice Department, including the hoax involving the Russian Alpha Bank. When Clinton campaign lawyer Michael Sussman wanted to plant the bizarre false claim of a secret communications channel between the Trump campaign and the Kremlin, Baker was his go-to speed dial contact. Baker would later testify about this at Sussman's trial. Baker's name also appeared prominently in controversies related to other Russian-related FBI allegations against Trump. He was, like we just said, forced out and investigated for leaks. He became a defender of the Russian investigations, despite findings of bias and even criminal conduct. He was also a frequent target of Donald Trump on social media, including Twitter. Baker responded with public criticisms of Trump for his false narratives. Okay, it says here, despite findings of bias and even criminal conduct. So what I said then about him not being charged on about that investigation may not be true based on this. So put a pin on that. I'll have to double check that. Here is where the Kevin Bacon part comes in. It now appears that most of the figures and institutions involved in Russian collusion claims are within 6 degrees of James Baker. Not only did Baker work closely with the fired FBI Director James Comey and other key figures at the Justice Department, but he was an acquaintance of key Clinton figures like Sussman, who pushed the false collusion allegation. He was also hired by Brookings Institution, which has a curious Bacon-like role in the origins and development of all the Russian collusion. None of this means Baker was the driving force of the scandal. To the contrary, Baker earned his bones in Washington as a facilitator, a reliable ally when it came to business of the Beltway. But it's hardly surprising that Baker found a home at Twitter, where caution was always warranted in dealing with potentially damaging stories for Democratic interests. So again, this guy has clear bias for one side. We're not saying that he was creating scandal, but he absolutely had a conflict of interest that should have caused him to recuse himself from anything revolving around the Twitter files, and he did not. So, you know, when the movie of this is made later, we had a discussion this morning, and I put it in the newsletter, is that this guy will be a key figure in the movie about this and how this, you know, so we saw Benedict Cumberbatch as who the hell was he? In the,
in the Brexit movie. I don't remember his name.
He was that dude, right? We saw Christian Bale as the, who was he in the fallout of the mortgage?
Berry.
Yes. Okay. So this guy is going to have that type of movie. And I wanted to ask everyone else who you think will play him, because this will be an important movie. My vote is for Michael C. Hall from Dexter.
From Dexter. I think that'd be a good one.
This is who.
After seeing his picture, I just posted Bradley Whitford. I think he looks a lot like him.
I don't know who that is.
Do you have my laptop or
you
no?
You would if you saw him.
Did we solve that? No, we didn't. Sorry.
Okay.
I saw someone hopping in the chat. Or I saw someone moving my mouse around. I thought you guys fixed that.
Okay. Sorry. Grimm's vote was C. Matt Ross. I wasn't familiar with this actor, but I can see it. Yes. I welcome your contributions in the chat. David just said somebody.
Bradley Whitford from The West Wing.
Don't know that person.
You don't know The West Wing?
You would.
No.
Bradley Whitford? He was, I forget what role he played.
Hang on. Google it.
It's on my, but.
I can Google it myself.
My vote was Zoe Saldana, just to woke the shit out of it, but nobody took on that.
I'm going to give that a no. Oh, yes, to Bradley Whitford. Yes.
Yes.
Okay. You had no vote? You were too busy today?
I was too busy preparing for the show. Sorry.
You got nothing?
I got nothing.
I also like.
But I liked your Michael C. Hall. I think it was a good one.
Oh, thank you.
Or Danny DeVito.
No. Or the guy who is currently playing John Mayer in John Mayer, the Prime Minister of England.
John Major?
Major. Sorry. I got him confused with the rock star.
John Mayer movie,
John, John Major.
Alive,
that actor who's playing him in The Crown, I thought was really good, could also do this. I can't remember his name. Anyway, that was a fun little game around this not fun story. So let us know what you think of that in the chat.
That's right. We got more news to get to. We're going to talk about Saudi Arabia and, the murder of a journalist. And will anyone pay for that? The murder of journalist Jamal Khashoggi.
You say it different every
Do
time.
I say it? I try.
It's Khashoggi, I believe.
Khashoggi. I try. Anyway, we should not mar his name. We're going to talk about that story. It's an unbelievable update. But first,
we want to tell you about our friends over at Mrs. Field. Fields. Now, this is a company that probably needs no introduction, but you might not know that you don't have to take a trip to the mall to get these goodies. In fact, given that it's the holiday season and we want to give each person we care about a gift that brings them joy, you can find such a gift over at Mrs. Fields' website. This is a what we're showing you here on the screen is just a sampling of all of the beautiful gift offerings that Mrs. Fields has. You don't need a fruitcake. You need some cookies, right? Who doesn't love fresh from the oven, melt in your mouth cookies? Mrs. Fields has just what the gift doctor ordered. Mrs. Fields will wrap up your delicious cookies in unique creative packages that will thrill the people who get them. Now, we actually did get the one that you're seeing on the screen right now, the snowman looking one. And let me tell you how thrilled my kids were. Amazingly thrilled. In fact, the other day I walked in on my son's room and I was sick, so I didn't put him to bed. And when I went to wake him up in the morning, I saw like a trail of these packages leading to his bedroom, because when mommy doesn't put you to bed, you can have cookies before bed. So these things are so super cute. It's the perfect gift for teachers, for grandparents, kids, friends, coworkers, clients, what have you. And it's a recognizable name, so everyone's going to get excited when this comes to them. So right now, Mrs. Fields is giving the best deal available only to our listeners. You can get 25% off everything site-wide when you go to mrsfields.com/redacted. Don't spell out Mrs. It's mrsfields.com/redacted. That's right. Mrs. Fields is giving this exclusive deal only to podcast listeners. 25% off everything at mrsfields.com/redacted. That's mrsfields.com/redacted.
All right. Well, do you remember when President Biden said he was going to make Saudi Arabia a pariah for, among other things, the murder of Washington Post journalist Jamal Khashoggi?
Yes, I do.
Well, a federal judge has now dismissed a lawsuit against the Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, known as MBS, for the murder of the journalist Jamal Khashoggi. This is astonishing.
Okay, and guess who argued on behalf of MBS and his dismissal from the case? President Biden. Now, this is not something that we can blame on, like, well, it was the Biden Justice Department. Maybe it was someone else's decision. No. In fact, in the argument that the Biden administration made for the dismissal of this case, they said that this is at the discretion of the president and the president alone. We're going to show that to you. First, some background. Recall on the campaign trail that President Biden said he was going to be tough on Saudi Arabia and make them a pariah. Listen to this tough talk and specifically watch his mean face that goes along with it.
We were not going to, in fact, sell more weapons to them. We were going to, in fact, make them pay the price and make them, in fact, the pariah that they are.
Yeah, tough guy.
Well executed, right? Well, in fact, he's done the opposite. In fact, the president's legal team says that this was the president's call and that the courts actually cannot take it from him. This is the brief that the Biden administration, on behalf of the U.S. government, filed in late November. And they specifically said the United States respectfully informs the court that defendant MBS, the prime minister of Saudi Arabia, is the sitting head of government and accordingly is immune from this suit in support of its determination. The United States sets forth that the Constitution assigns to the president the responsibility to represent the nation in its conduct of foreign relations. And then there's some background there. That constitutional grant of authority affords the executive branch the power to determine whether foreign officials possess certain state status-based immunities from the suit, including immunity under the head of state doctrine. Here, the executive branch, that means the presidency, after considering the relevant principles of customary international law and in its implementation of foreign policy and conduct relations with foreign nations, has determined that MBS possesses immunity. So they're telling us right here, the president himself made this determination. And they're saying that we have to use the precedents that the head of state of a nation is immune. Now, they can make this at their discretion. Would they do this for, say, tiny little island in the Caribbean? Maybe not, but we know that Saudi Arabia is not a tiny little island in the Caribbean. It is much more tangential, center to the Biden administration than that. Now, even though U.S. intelligence believes unquestionably, unequivocally, that MBS is not innocent, they say they're going to handle this on their own. You don't need a court of law. Here's what they say they did. They're like, we have grave concerns about this killing, but we raised them publicly with the Saudi government, and we imposed financial sanctions and visa restrictions. So we're good on this one, you guys. We're good.
Visa restrictions. That's it. Visa restrictions. You can't travel. You can't go to Disney World, MBS.
Yeah.
Because you killed a journalist.
The journalist in question, Jamal Khashoggi, he was a critic of the Saudi regime. He was lured to a consulate in Turkey to obtain documents for his marriage, and there he was captured and brutally murdered. There's even tape of the audio tape of it. These cases, if you look up these briefs, they are graphic, and we're going to spare you of that right now. But the lawsuit we're talking about was brought by the U.S. rights group called Democracy for the Arab World Now, which he started, and his fiance, Hatice Sengiz, I'm sorry, it's Turkish, and I'm sorry if that's wrong. Actually, she calls himself his wife because they had an Islamic ceremony and they were seeking to confirm it civilly when he was captured. She also filed the lawsuit against two associates of MBS who she accused of being accomplice in the murder, but the court dismissal applies to those men too, even though they are not heads of state. So the Biden administration just gave them an off, even though that this doesn't apply to them. The title and when he took it on, we're going to talk about in a second. But one question you might ask is, why was this suit brought in the U.S. when the crime happened in Turkey and he was a Saudi, he was a Saudi citizen? Well, she actually explains in the claim that she files that he approached the Saudi embassy in Washington, D.C. to acquire the documents he needed for his marriage, but he was told that those documents were not available at the embassy in Washington and that he would have to travel to Istanbul, Turkey. And it was there that he was captured. And while she waited outside for 12 hours, it's awful to think about. God. Now, the judge who ruled on this case, you can tell he found this agonizing, and I empathize with him. It doesn't look like he wants to let this guy's off at all, but he had no choice. His name, that's my derision. I don't know what he wants, but you can read for yourself. His name is Judge John D. Bates. See part of the ruling here? He says, plaintiffs allege that MBS ordered Khashoggi's ruthless torture and murder, and that it was planned and carried out by his accomplices, these two people. The United States has reached the same conclusion that the horrific killing was approved by MBS himself. Even defendants acknowledged that Khashoggi was murdered in the Saudi consulate and that the murder was carried out by Saudi nationalists. However, the court cannot resolve this issue at this time. The court has a responsibility to decide preliminary issues such as jurisdiction before the merits of the case, meaning he can't say about the murder. He has to sort of go through the details, and specifically in light of the statement of interest filed by the U.S. in the absence of any basis to assert personal jurisdiction, the court concludes that the case must be dismissed. I mean, think about this for a minute. This matter was taken out of a court's hands by President Biden himself, of a country. He's doing the legal bidding of a country he said he would make a pariah. Even Judge Bates' ruling makes it clear that this was the president's call. Take a look. They said under customary international law, foreign heads of state and heads of government and foreign ministers are entitled to status-based immunity. But if you go down, it says in most cases, the executive branch makes the immunity determination.
So can we ask the president of the United States if he would ever hold a friggin' press conference? We could ask him this question. Here's a question I'd like to ask, Mr. President. The MBS, who you met with in Saudi Arabia, you said you would make him a pariah for the murder of a Washington Post journalist. We now know, and your intelligence community has said, he was responsible for killing this journalist. Why did you let him off? Like, let him just answer that. No one will ask him that question.
No, absolutely not.
No one will ask
him
that question.
And you can see that the dates in this next screen I'm going to show you were kind of manipulated because the court asked the United States if they wanted to ring in on this. The United States said, yes, in fact, we would, but they asked for a an extension. And within that time, MBS was crowned prime minister of Saudi Arabia. So, you know, again, we're going to put the Biden administration, the Biden trip, right in the middle of that and maybe saying like, hey, I have some room if you give him a title. We don't know if those conversations happened, but he was there. He talked to these guys and he had the opportunity to exert this privilege or not. And he decided to.
And when he upon the trip, he was asked specifically about this.
Yes.
Would you hold them to account? Would you hold the prince to account when you go to Saudi Arabia? He said, I will. And he later said, I had some tough words for him in private. We had some tough words.
Stop killing people were so, those words.
Hey, we got some journalists. They're going to come over and interview you. Can you please stop killing our journalists? That's the tough stuff I said to him. He's like, all right, you got me that one time. I did the one thing. I won't do it again.
One time. You do something one time. Now, the plaintiffs, meaning his fiance and the rights group, had argued against this head of state dismissal, saying, look, this is the president's call. And in fact, they said the court doesn't have to defer to the executive branch, so they should make an independent decision about MBS immunity. But here's where the court came down on this. He said, this is the judge's opinion. Deference to the executive branch's foreign immunity determinations is motivated by the caution that courts believe appropriate of the judicial branch when the conduct of foreign affairs is involved. As the branch of government primarily responsible for international affairs and diplomacy, the executive branch may be hindered or embarrassed should this judiciary branch second guess its foreign decisions. So you can sort of follow that argument that the executive branch deals with other countries and the courts do not. So they have to protect this chain of command. But it's awful. And I empathize with this judge because you can see if you read his ruling, you can see he's horrified by this. But it leaves a man's murder unavenged. And it absolutely shows us about the president's loyalties.
So he and his wife go to the embassy, or the consulate. They go inside. He goes inside to get the documents. He never comes out. He's brutally murdered inside at the call of the Saudi crown prince. He never comes out. She waits 12 hours.
There's audio recording.
And we know, we won't even talk about how awful, awful, awful it was inside and what actually happened. Many of you probably already know that story.
It was not a quick and merciful death.
No. And so then, and now nothing. We know who's responsible. And the United States knows who's responsible. The president of the United States knows who's responsible and let him off. Like that's it. That's the story. And yeah, we should be ashamed for it. And the president should be ashamed. I mean, this is absolutely awful. If you're in that office, you're in the White House, you're in the Oval Office, you sleep in the Lincoln, you sleep in the Lincoln bedroom. You know, in the residency. Like you have a high duty to the country to uphold the standard of the Constitution, the rule of law. And you have like such a solemn duty in that office. And this is how you sleep. How do you sleep at night with yourself?
I mean, you talk about what Carol Roth, the author Carol Roth, says, the government picking winners and losers. We paid for that, for this brief on behalf of this dismissal. This was done on taxpayer money. And this one is so hard to stomach. There's no happy ending here for it.
No, 60 Minutes, when you sit down with your 80th interview with President Biden in probably a week, why don't you ask him this question first? But you won't. You'll ask him some softball question about Easter bunnies or something, I'm sure. Anyway, let us know your thoughts on this story in the chat below. It's just absolutely heartbreaking. We have a truncated show tonight. We have some other commitments we have to run to. So we wanted to say thank you on this show. And please subscribe to the channel. If you're new here, please hit that subscribe button. And whether on Rumble or on YouTube, please do that. YouTube.com/redacted news. Or if over on Rumble, it's rumble.com/redacted. We are live every day at 4 p.m. Eastern time, Monday through Thursday. So please join us back here again on the show tomorrow. And one more thing. We do have a store, and I saw many of you getting in your Christmas orders. It's if you go to redactedstore.com, you can get some of our new merch. So our new hats mugs, hoodies, tumblers, all of that good stuff. You go to redactedstore.com. That's the place to go to support independent journalism and what we do here on the show. It directly goes back into the show to support what we do. Thank you so much for joining us on Redacted, and we will see you back here tomorrow at 4 p.m. Eastern time. Thanks, everyone.
Bye now.